Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is July 29th, 2021, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is I Don't Need This Pressure On. I Don't Need This Pressure On. I Don't Need This Pressure On. Chest wall thickness at the needle decompression site. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Robert Edmonds. He is an emergency physician in the Air Force in Ohio. This is Bob's 14th episode co-hosting the SGEM. Welcome back to the SGEM, Bob.
Thanks, Ken. It's always a pleasure. And I'm looking to see how many you'll let me do.
Well, let's get your disclaimer out of the way.
Sure. The views and opinions of this podcast do not represent the United States government or the U.S. Air Force.
All right, done. Hey, good news. Did you hear?
What's that?
Top Gun Maverick has a release date, I think this is the third or fourth time, of November 19th, 2021. And everyone, including you, are invited to come to my place to celebrate.
That sounds pretty awesome. If I can arrange some leave, and if we're actually able to leave the country that time with the Delta variant going up, I'll try to, but no promises.
Yeah. COVID. It ruins everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, sure does.
All right, well, let's get to a case.
Yeah, so you're driving home from a busy shift and see a car collision occur right in front of you. The driver is a restrained, self-extricated male who lost control of his vehicle into a light post and the vehicle's airbags deployed. After safely pulling over and having a bystander call 911, you evaluate the patient. He's speaking in full sentences without confusion, has a strong, rapid pulse, significant pain in his chest, and is having a very hard time breathing. As you wait for EMS to arrive, you quickly dash back to your car to get your stethoscope and an angiocatheter you have in your glove box. You notice a marked difference between breath sounds on the left side compared to the right, and decide the patient needs treatment for attention pneumothorax. After obtaining consent from the patient, you debate whether to decompress the second intercostal space in the midclavicular line, as you originally learned, or in the fourth or fifth intercostal space mid-axillary line, as per the current ATLS guidelines.
Well, you're right. The current Advanced Trauma and Life Support, or ATLS guidelines, that were published 3 years ago in 2018, do recommend using the fourth or fifth intercostal space in the mid-axillary line. And we covered the changes that were made in the ATLS guidelines on the SGEM Extra with Dr. Neil Perry. And there were several changes to the new guidelines. I think we highlighted 10. But one of the big ones was changing that location for needle decompression for adults, not children, but for adult patients.
Now, needle thoracostomy is subject to several complications compared to a tube thoracostomy, primarily due to the shorter length of the needle as well as the smaller lumen. So site selection is focused on finding a short distance and a site unlikely to kink or get dislodged.
And we've covered chest tube thoracostomies a couple of times on the SGEM with Dr. Richard Thoracic Rick Malfainer. SGEM number 129 looked at where to put the chest tube on trauma patients and if you need to get a post-procedural chest x-ray. The conclusion from that episode was just get the tube on the correct side. That's important. Within the triangle of safety and within the pleural space. Continue to obtain a chest x-ray post-chest tube, knowing it'll probably not change management. Be more concerned, though, if the patient is doing poorly or if the chest tube is not draining. Now, the other episode on chest tubes was SGEM number 300. The clinical question in that episode was, does everyone with a large, first-time, spontaneous pneumothorax need a chest tube? The answer from that episode was, it's reasonable to provide conservative management, and what the conservative management means is no chest tube immediately, in a patient with a large, first-time, spontaneous pneumothorax, if you can ensure close follow-up.
Yep. And then circling back to the issue at hand, needle decompression, the changes in the ATLS guidelines were based in part on a small study with an N of 20 that utilized cadavers. There were also studies using CT scans showing a preference for the fourth or fifth intercostal space anterior axillary line. These studies were limited by heterogeneity, possible publication bias, and not being randomized trials.
So these authors are adding to the literature by using point of care ultrasound or POCUS on live patients. This could reduce some of the potential confounders in prior studies that were exclusively cadavers, which may have differences in chest wall thickness due to postmortem changes.
The previous studies also focused on homogeneous populations like military members and are therefore less generalizable to the general population. Additionally, by using ultrasound instead of CT, some of the confounders from arm placement during CT were reduced.
All right, Bob, what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer on today's podcast?
Is the chest wall thickness at the second intercostal space in the midclavicular line not thicker than the fourth or fifth intercostal space anterior axillary line?
And not to confuse people, but this study looked at the anterior axillary line. And remember, in the ATLS update, it was the fourth or fifth intercostal space in the mid axillary line. And the reference?
Azizi et al., Optimal Anatomical Location for Needle Decompression for Tension Pneumothorax, a multicenter prospective cohort study.
I don't need to remind you, being your 14th guest skeptic appearance. Let's do the PICO. What was the population?
A convenient sample of all adults presenting to one of the 8 participating hospitals over a 2-week period from June 11th to 23rd, 2019.
Now, they did exclude patients with pre-existing thoracic deformities, patients who were seriously ill requiring continuous urgent care, and patients who were unable to provide consent. So what did they put as the intervention in this study?
Chest wall thickness at the second intercostal space in the midclavicular line.
And what did they compare it to?
Chest wall thickness at the fourth or fifth intercostal space anterior axillary line.
All right, let's run through the outcomes. What was their primary outcome?
Median chest wall thickness in intercostal space 2 midclavicular line and intercostal space 4 or 5 anterior axillary line.
And you know, I gotta love it that they only had one primary outcome. How about their secondary outcomes?
So they looked at a subgroup of BMI 25 to 30 chest wall thickness in both sites, as well as BMI 30 and over chest wall thickness in both sites. Additionally, they looked at hypothetical failure rates of needle decompression.
All right. Well, the author's conclusions were, quote, in overweight and obese subjects, the chest wall is thicker in the intercostal space, fourth and fifth anterior axillary line, than in the intercostal space, second midclavicular line. And theoretical chances of successful needle decompression in a tension pneumothorax are significantly higher in the intercostal space, second midclavicular line, compared to the intercostal space fourth or fifth anterior axillary line, end of quote. All right, let's go through the quality checklist, and this is for an observational study. So the first question, Bob, is did this study address a clearly focused issue?
Yes.
Did the authors use an appropriate method to answer their specific question?
I'd say this is unsure. The possibility of compression of tissues with the ultrasound is a potential confounder, but it was addressed by the authors.
How about the cohort? Was it recruited in an acceptable way?
This is also unsure. The authors state they used a convenient sample of patients presenting to the ED of 8 hospitals during a 2-week period. The words convenient sample often refer to limited hours of enrollment, and this is not explicitly stated.
Well, how about the exposure? Was it accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes.
And how about the outcome measure? Was it accurately measured to minimize bias?
This is a yes and an unsure. So, yes, for the chest wall thickness, with the caveat about the possibility of tissue compression with the ultrasound probe. And unsure for the hypothetical needle decompression failure rate, because it's hypothetical.
Yeah, it's hypothetical. How about the authors? Did they identify all important confounding factors?
I would say no. They didn't address the angle at which needle decompression is performed.
Was the follow-up of subjects complete enough?
Yep.
How precise are the results?
I'd say they're precise.
Do you believe the results?
They seem reasonable.
Can the results be applied to the local population?
It's unsure. It would depend on your population. I believe 7 of the 8 hospitals in this were in the Netherlands and 1 was in the UK.
Do the results of this study fit with other available evidence?
So it attempts to counter the recent change in the 10th edition of ATLS, which doesn't make the study wrong, but does mean it's counter to other evidence.
So that's a no then. All right, let's go through the results. There were 390 patients available for analysis in this study. The mean age was 51 years, 52% were male, and the mean body mass index was 25.5. What was the key result?
There was no statistical difference in mean chest wall thickness between the second intercostal space midclavicular line and the fourth and fifth intercostal space anterior axillary line.
All right, and that primary outcome was the median chest wall thickness. What were the actual measurements?
So it was 26 millimeters in both groups with a p-value of less than 0.001.
All right, and with the secondary outcomes, they had some subgroup analyses. They looked at patients with BMIs of 25 to 30. What did they find there?
So for the second intercostal space, midclavicular line, it was 27 millimeters versus 29 millimeters in the fourth, fifth intercostal space, anterior axillary line. So 2 millimeters deeper.
So it was thinner actually in the second intercostal space in the anterior chest, the traditional place that we used to place the decompression needle. How about with people who had a larger BMI, greater than 30?
So in the larger group, there was a larger difference. It was 35 versus 39, favoring the second intercostal space midclavicular line.
Again, that goes against the ATLS guidelines from 2018, showing that the chest wall anterior is thinner for chest wall thickness compared to that fourth or fifth intercostal space in the anterior axillary line. How about the hypothetical failure rates of needle decompression?
So these are hypothetical, so we're not going to go through them on the podcast, but we will put a table in the show notes.
Okay, so let's start talking nerdy, Bob. And I've got 5 things I wanted to go through. And the first thing you've already touched upon a little bit, and that's about convenience sample. The authors state they used a convenience sample of patients presenting to the emergency department of 8 hospitals during a 2-week period back in 2019. The words convenience often refers to limited hours of enrollment, typically not nights, weekends, and holidays. They did not explicitly state what they meant by a convenience sample in the published manuscript, so selection bias could have been introduced using this methodology.
Number 2 is angle of attack. So the authors mentioned the chest wall thickness, and then used this to extrapolate the hypothetical rate of needle decompression failure for both sites. This assumes the clinician is performing the needle decompression, entering the skin in a perpendicular approach, and going the shortest distance possible to the pleura. But it's reasonable to suspect that the patient who's getting a needle decompression, rather than a chest tube, is further from definitive care or in a greater degree of extremis than a stable patient with a spontaneous pneumo who ambulated into the ED complaining of chest pain and difficulty breathing. It's likely that not all needles used for needle decompression are placed perfectly perpendicular to the site of choice, and it seems reasonable to conclude that there could be a significant difference in the actual angle of attack the needle takes when comparing the two sites. All this together makes the author's hypothetical rate of needle decompression failure, based purely on chest wall thickness, a little less definitive.
Good point. The third thing we wanted to talk about was site selection. They evaluated the site previously recommended by ATLS, the second intercostal space in the midclavicular line, but they didn't compare it to the different site that the new ATLS recommends. These authors looked at the fourth or fifth intercostal space in the anterior axillary line instead of the ATLS recommended fourth or fifth intercostal space in the mid-axillary line. Now, there is a systematic review and meta-analysis by Lan et al., and they say, quote, "In our analysis of the chest wall thickness reported at different locations, we found that the mean chest wall thickness was smallest at the intercostal space, fourth or fifth, in the anterior axillary line, thicker at the fourth and fifth intercostal space in the mid-axillary line, and thickest at the intercostal space second in the midclavicular line. Despite this observed tendency, the difference in chest wall thickness was not statistically significant." End of quote. So if the authors truly intended to support the use of the second intercostal space in the midclavicular line over the more lateral and inferior sites, the better comparison would have been the fourth or fifth intercostal space mid-axillary line based on previous evidence.
Fourth mark is under pressure. The authors used ultrasound to measure the chest wall thickness at both sites. They state that the ultrasound probe was placed, quote, without any compression, unquote, and exactly perpendicular to the chest wall. Although every effort was likely made to reduce compression, these two sites do differ in how lateral they are, and it's possible that some compression of tissues did occur during measurement despite the best of efforts due to gravity. This challenges the accuracy of the measurements between the two sites.
And we left the best to last. The fifth nerdy point is about clinically important. Well, it is an interesting study using POCUS to determine chest wall thickness and generate a hypothetical failure rate. A much better study would be a randomized trial. You could randomize patients into getting a needle decompression at the second intercostal space, mid-clavicular line, or the fourth or fifth intercostal space in the mid-axillary line, as per the latest ATLS guidelines. The primary outcome could be successful decompression. If one site is superior to another, then a further larger trial could be done looking at all-cause mortality, a very clinically important outcome, as the primary outcome. All right, those are the five nerdy points. Let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusion.
So we're hesitant to change practice based on a subgroup analysis and find insufficient evidence to reject the ATLS guidelines for needle thoracostomy placement site. This is recognizing that there is not strong data to support the ATLS guideline recommendation.
Yeah, we don't have great evidence in the first place. All right, so how about an SGEM bottom line then?
This study does not support the claim that the second intercostal space midclavicular line is thicker than the fourth or fifth intercostal space anterior axillary line.
All right, Bob, how about you resolve the case you presented with your quick thinking in the field and doing a needle decompression?
I actually have one in my car. So using the patient's nipple as a landmark, you identify the fourth intercostal space and scrub an alcohol pad over the mid-axillary line. Then you insert the angiocatheter. You're rewarded with a rush of blood-speckled air, and after the patient recovers from their pain, they start breathing with less labor.
So how are you going to take this? Really, it's an imaging study, right? It's about the thickness of the chest wall, not a clinical study per se. How are you going to take this study and apply it clinically then?
So for me, this will not change my practice. It's good to recognize that the evidence is weak to support the best location for needle thoracostomy, but really just the most important thing is decompress that lung.
Yeah, decompress that lung. Okay, so you're at the roadside. What are you going to actually say to the patient before you stick them with this needle in their fourth intercostal space in the mid-axillary line?
You have a life-threatening condition involving a dropped lung, and I got to fix it now so you can survive long enough to get to a hospital where they can get a more permanent solution involving a longer, bigger tube that'll drain out the air that's leaking out of your lung and into your chest.
All right, it's time to announce the Keener Contest winner, and last week's winner was Zach Lyman. Zach knew that it was the actor Cesar Romero, who played the Joker in the Batman series, who died of pneumonia. What's the Keener Contest question this week?
What infectious disease was previously treated by performing an iatrogenic intentional pneumothorax to, quote, rest the lung?
I'm expecting thoracic Rick to get this answer right. So Rick, if you're listening, you better email me. I did not know the answer. Thankfully, Bob did provide the answer to me. But if you know the answer, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Well, thank you, Bob. And I'm looking forward to attending my Top Gun celebration.
Well, I really hope so. You know, this is the 14th episode and he flew the F-14, so it'd be pretty cool.
Ooh, that was very meta, yes. I'd like to remind the SGEM listeners that you can get CME credits for listening to this podcast. Hey, you're already doing it. Now, I'm going to keep the content free because it's part of the free open access to medical education. or FOMED philosophy. We want patients to get the best care based on the best evidence. But if you have to, you know, collect those CME credits, then why not click on the link and collect some credits for something you're already doing? All right, Bob, can you read the SJAM tagline? But I want you to do it as Maverick in the F-14, talking to Goose in the cockpit.
All right. Remember, be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it, on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.